On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Retired Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman claimed without evidence last year that the election was stolen. He took to YouTube over the weekend to criticize Governor Evers, and he's leading a Republican-ordered investigation into the 2020 presidential election. Recently, the spotlight has been on his subpoenas of the head of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, mayors of the five largest cities. Do you think a review is warranted, or are Republicans exploiting a conspiracy theory? It's 800-642-1234. Patrick Marley covers state government and politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Patrick, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's start with Gableman here, investigating the 2020 presidential election, subpoenaed mayors, clerks, records. What is going on?
So Gableman was hired this summer by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss to look into the investigation. And after some time, he's really geared up his investigation. He issued these subpoenas, which are very broad in scope. They ask for every election record related to 2020 for the clerks of the five largest cities in the state, the head of the State Elections Commission, and the five mayors of those cities. That would comprise hundreds of thousands, probably millions of pages of records. And so the recipients have balked a little bit at that. Gableman then scaled back dramatically what he wanted and told them to give them records specific to grants they received from a private organization to help run the election. Most or all of which have previously been released under the state's open records law.
And then
that's what he's done with the cities. It's a little unclear what he's done with the State Elections Commission.
And then over the weekend, Gableman took to YouTube with a nearly 7-minute video criticizing Governor Evers.
Governor Evers seems to believe that there is no need for this investigation. He argues the election result has already been proven, he says, probably 100 times. And he says this is a $700,000 boondoggle to investigate. Those statements show that Tony Evers has an incomplete and misguided view of what we're doing.
So what do you make of this video?
Well, it's interesting. He put this video out. You know, the comments that he's responding to were made by Governor Evers about 2 weeks ago. At that time, Governor Evers, as Justice Gableman said there, called it a boondoggle to spend this much taxpayer money on a review that courts have found was for an election that courts have found the result was properly determined. And he also said that clerks should be lawyered up for this probe. Gableman didn't say anything about that at the time that Evers made those comments. But then in the last week, Gableman has faced a lot of criticism from both the left and the right because he issued these subpoenas and then he pulled them back. And then he said he hadn't pulled them back when, in fact, he had done so. And so amid all that criticism that he faces, he then turns it and goes after the governor in this weekend video.
He calls himself the Wisconsin Special Counsel. What do you make of this title and how he's using it?
That is a title that Representative Robin Voss gave him. I mean, the legislature can hire who they want and give them whatever title they want. It's not, it's not a title we've typically had in state government in the past. It's, obviously at the federal government, you have special counsels like they did with Bob Mueller and Ken Starr. We don't really have a similar system in Wisconsin, but that's the title that they have given to Gableman.
So as an appointee of Speaker Voss, does Gableman have the power to subpoena anyone?
Yes. The state law allows the legislature to issue subpoenas. They have to be approved by the speaker and the chief clerk, and they have to be done in the context of an investigation that a committee is running as approved by one house of the legislature. So back in the spring, the state assembly with the Republicans in the state assembly approved a resolution authorizing the state elections or the assembly elections committee to conduct this investigation under the auspices of that. Voss hired Gableman and then Voss approved these subpoenas. If you remember, a month or so ago, Voss declined to issue some other subpoenas that the chairwoman of the Assembly Elections Committee had wanted to issue for voting machines and ballots from those, from a couple of cities.
We're talking with Patrick Marley, state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're discussing former Justice Michael Gableman and the GOP Assembly probe into the 2020 election. With your thoughts about it at 800-642-1234. So Gableman's review is not an audit. Can you explain exactly what it is then?
Well, he calls it an investigation. It's a review of the election. It's he has a lot of latitude as to how he conducts this. His subpoenas have focused on these donations that the five cities received from the Center for Tech and Civic Life, which is an organization that received $350 million from Mark Zuckerberg and his wife to help cities run elections in the face of COVID, because they said they didn't have enough money from the government. This group gave money to cities all across the country, gave money to more than 200 cities and villages and towns in Wisconsin. The lion's share of that money went to the five largest cities for two reasons. One, they applied early and sort of applied as a group with a specific plan to get this funding. And also they, you know, serve the largest number of people. So there's so that's why they got as much money as they did. They got about $10 million went to Wisconsin. Most of that, like I say, to these five cities, but there were another 195 or more that also got money. So Gableman has put his attention on that, but he's also said that he wants to have some kind of look at voting machines. That's been pretty vague. And he wants to look at guidance that the Wisconsin Elections Commission gave to local clerks that he believes is not in keeping with state law. That he believes may not be in keeping with state law.
May not be keeping in with state law. So what is the role then of the Wisconsin Elections Commission here? And do you know if he is talking with the commission?
Well, he's issued a subpoena to the head of the commission for all of their election records for 2020, which would be, you know, many terabytes of data.
That would be massive.
That would be very large, as the chairwoman of the Elections Commission said over the weekend. That would be truckloads of records, and has told her to sit for an interview this coming Friday. Now, he's pulled back all these other interviews, and it's unclear, you know, just where their talks are with the state commission. So we don't know if that interview is going to happen. We don't know if it's going to happen on that date. We don't know if it's going to be done, where the public can attend it. So a lot of questions surrounding that.
And he also had, Gableman also had a lot of words to say about how this sort of probe worked in Arizona. How has he differentiated himself from what happened in Arizona?
So what's happening in Wisconsin is happening in some other states that are led by Republicans, and Arizona was the first state to really go with this early on. Their state Senate approved hiring a private contractor, which turned out to be Cyber Ninjas, this Florida company, to review the ballots in Maricopa County, which is the largest county in Arizona. About 2 million of their 3 million some ballots were cast there. And so they spent months in an arena sort of equivalent to the Alliant Energy Center with all the ballots there, volunteers going through them one by one, taking photos of every ballot, doing all kinds of reviews of them. Unlike in the probe in Wisconsin, this one was funded largely by private donors. And so there's about $6 million was spent on this. It was really criticized from Democrats and election experts and many Republicans from Arizona and Maricopa County because they saw it as sloppy and insecure. Gableman went down there and spent many days visiting the facility. And then he said last week that he thought it was an ineffective effort and a waste of money down there. And that he believed the effort in Wisconsin was structured better because it's got him, someone who is effectively a government employee, overseeing it rather than leaving it to private donors who might try to sway the probe in the direction that they want it to go.
All right. Well, we'll keep watching. We're going to be moving on here to discuss the timeline and developments in drawing new legislative and congressional maps with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's state politics reporter Patrick Marley with us. Do you worry about partisan gerrymandering? Would you feel more comfortable if a judge created Wisconsin's next electoral maps? Do you worry that people of color and other minority groups will have their voting power diminished in the next redistricting maps? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Patrick Marley in a minute here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. State lawmakers are required to redraw election map boundaries for legislative and congressional districts once a decade based on the new U.S. Census data. The Republican-controlled legislature has not said exactly when they plan to vote on new maps, but the process is moving ahead. We're checking in with your questions about redistricting, the litigation, the timeline, where the courts might fit in. 800-642-1234. Patrick Marley has covered politics and state government for nearly two decades for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's with us for about nine more minutes. So, Patrick, redistricting underway, which could determine the partisan balance of power for a decade or more. Where are we at in this process?
We're heading straight to court, it looks like. The legislature probably in November will pass some maps, but it seems very unlikely that whatever they pass and Governor Evers, or whatever Republican lawmakers want to do and what Governor Evers wants to do will line up. The governor reiterated over the weekend that he would veto maps if he considers them a gerrymander. It appears there's an outside chance that they could reach a deal, but really the chance for a breakdown seems very high. Both sides acknowledge, which is why we expect it to go to court and why lawsuits have already been filed, and both the federal court and the state Supreme Court are gearing up for some kind of resolution to this matter.
Yeah, I mean, looking to the courts here, two suits moving forward before the Supreme Court and in federal court. Help us sort through the litigation and what's being heard in court.
So they basically, a Democrat sued in federal court and conservative group sued in the state Supreme Court with the same premise, which is the maps are no longer constitutional because the new census shows us population data, which means the districts are not of equal population anymore. And so they've said we need to make sure we have new maps, and they want the court to basically declare that it will decide the maps if state politicians don't do so in a timely manner. Really, we have to have new maps by the spring so that we can hold the elections in the fall. Both candidates and election officials and voters need to know the outlines of the contours of those districts before you can hold elections several months beforehand. And so, this has got the attention of both courts, and they've signaled that they'll do something if lawmakers and Evers don't reach a deal.
And this is not unusual. It's happened in Wisconsin under divided governments before, at least several times in modern history. Isn't that right?
Yeah, the courts seem to always be the ones to decide these matters. You know, the outlier was 2011 when you had one party, that being the Republicans, controlling all of state government. So they were able to approve maps. But even then, there was years of litigation after that. Now, those maps that the Republicans drew mostly held up in court. There were two assembly districts that had to be changed because they had violated the voting rights of Hispanics. But in the rest of the maps were kept in place. They do have a Republican tilt to them. And so these new maps very well, almost certainly will be decided by the courts, because even if Evers and the lawmakers reached a deal, probably someone would be unhappy and would ask for judicial review of them.
Well, let's look at the People's Maps Commission, which was created by Governor Evers. They released their proposed maps at the end of September. What are the big takeaways there from the proposal?
So first of all, just to sort of step back and talk about what the People's Maps Commission is, Evers has said he wants these nonpartisan maps to be drawn. So he set up this commission to come up with maps, which they're going to send to the legislature. Now, these maps are non-binding. Republican lawmakers have often indicated that they would likely ignore them. And so they won't have any real effect in the legislative process unless they really attract the attention of Republicans. But they could have a big influence on the litigation because they would be maps that would be put forward before the court for them to consider. These maps have come out in draft form. The commission later this month will decide on what they're going to send to the legislature. They are surprising in that they decrease the number of districts that have a majority of black voters and a majority of Hispanic voters. So right now we have six assembly districts that have a majority of black voters. This would take that down to four. Now, one side effect of that is that you would have other districts nearby that would have substantial minorities of black voters. And so it could, proponents of this idea would argue that you extend the influence of black voters because they would have a voting strength in more districts, even though they would have an outright majority in fewer than they do today.
We're talking with Patrick Marley, state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're looking at how the legislature is preparing to vote on new maps this year as part of the once-a-decade job of redistricting. Taking your questions about redistricting, 800-642-1234. So, Patrick, Republicans are accepting maps from the public until Friday, but they have said that the work of the People's Maps Commission is, quote, phony. So what is the difference there? What is the nuance?
Well, it's interesting because the Republican leaders said from the outset when Governor Evers created this commission that they were going to ignore the maps. But now that we see the maps, they may find they're more interested in them than they thought. These maps still have a Republican advantage in them. You know, the way Wisconsin looks demographically is you have a lot of Democrats concentrated in Milwaukee and Dane County and a few other spots, and then Republicans dispersed more evenly throughout the state. And so in recognition of that, the commission's map has more as an advantage for Republicans where they would typically have advantages in gaining majorities in the state legislature. But they would have more competitive seats in the People's Maps proposals, mm-hmm. and there would be sort of opportunities for Democrats to win majorities in wave years. But I think the maps, you know, we'll have to see what the Republicans say, but they might not dislike them as much as they expected to dislike them.
And I wonder, what are the optics there of accepting maps from the public and making it a more grassroots process, if you will?
Well, the legislature has said it will accept all these maps, is accepting all of these maps. I think they took a lot of criticisms in 2011. They drew maps in a private law firm behind closed doors. They made people sign secrecy agreements, lawmakers sign secrecy agreements to see the districts before the public did. They took a lot of heat for that, and they're trying to be more transparent this time, taking more proposals. Now, we'll see what they do with all this information. We'll see how public their actual map drawing is. But for now, they're trying to do more to engage the public than they had a decade ago.
Yeah, and the essence of gerrymandering, where map makers create an advantage for their party in future elections by, you know, packing their opponents' voters into a few districts or spreading them thin among multiple districts. Is it true that Wisconsin's districts, as they stand now, are considered to be the most gerrymandered in the nation?
Well, I don't know if they are. By some measures, yes. I mean, they've taken a lot of criticism because they have a very heavy Republican advantage to them. As I said, I think the sort of the natural makeup of the state is going to have a Republican advantage. The maps they drew in 2011, you know, extended that further than it would sort of ordinarily be if you had a more neutral process used. So they've, you know, gerrymandering has become a big issue over the last decade because Republicans had a wave in 2010 and they were able to draw maps to their advantage in lots of states. And so you saw this all over the country at that time and this pushback against it where other states have adopted nonpartisan commissions that are getting their first chances to draw maps this time. And that's going a little rocky in some places. Mm-hmm.
We've heard from the Wisconsin Elections Commission that, you know, the goal here is to have new maps by March 1st. Do you think that's possible?
That timeline has definitely gotten the attention of the federal court. They have recognized that until they hear otherwise, that March 1st is the date that they think maps need to be in place. And so the federal court has said if the state Supreme Court doesn't act in a timely fashion, they'll hold a trial at the end of January, which would give the federal court the ability to draw maps by early March.
Mm-hmm.
The state Supreme Court has accepted a case, but not given timelines. You know, that litigation's in a little bit of an earlier stage and hasn't said exactly what it will do.
Patrick, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Patrick Marley is a state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Coming up, the state capitol report continues with Republican State Senator Rob Staffschult from New Richmond. We discuss a new package of bills on hunting, fishing, DNR regulations, and firearms. News update is next. Stay with us on the state capitol report on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have aligned to Republican State Senator Rob Staffschult of New Richmond, whose district runs along the northwestern edge of our state from about St. Croix County to Burnett County. Here's a bit of a roadmap for the bills we'll be discussing: concealed weapons, licensing, and reciprocity legislation, the possibility of an open sandhill crane hunting season, and starting with DNR rules and regulations and efforts to streamline them for hunters. What changes would you like to see to our state's hunting laws? How would you feel about a hunting season for sandhill cranes? 800-642-1234. State Senator Rob Staffschult chairs the Senate Committee on Sporting Heritage, Small Business, and Rural Issues. Senator Staffschult, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, good morning. So Republicans announced a package of bills broadly around hunting and fishing outdoors. One bill would require the DNR to identify ways of consolidating or eliminating hunting, fishing, and trapping approvals to reduce the types of licenses. What is the problem here with the current number of licenses?
Well, I think in general, this bill package affords the people of Wisconsin and those who come to our state a more clear-cut, easier approach to get people into the field. Since I've been in the legislature, one of the things we've done is always try to move forward things that take away some of the burdens, and especially target women and kids in the outdoors or younger folks, for sure, that continue on to our sporting heritage. And one of the things that we found, and I hear it on a regular basis when I'm back home talking to constituents or if I go up north during a hunting season, is the burdens that it takes to get all these different approvals. Hunter safety. In today's day and age, these kids are busier than I think kids have ever been, and it just takes some time. One of the things that I've been a proponent of is the trapper education component. It's really tough for a kid to find a trapper's education course, and oftentimes they have to travel around the state, and then they do a test out day somewhere. So we're just trying to make that easier without losing credibility and get those kids in the field and continue our heritage of sporting heritage here in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and so it sounds like you're trying to reduce some red tape, if you will. The one bill that proposes allowing a mentored hunt to replace in-person field testing as part of DNR hunter education courses, which you're, I think you're referring to, what would qualify as a mentored hunt?
Well, so there is an actual legal definition of a mentored hunt in the state of Wisconsin. Actually, mentored hunt or trap, we've made it so that the parents get to decide when kids, and it's mentored hunts can be for adults too, just anybody that hasn't tried it, but they have to be arm's length from the mentor. The mentee has to be arm's length from the mentor, and they really get actual hands-on experience in the field to understand the practicality of what we're talking about in these different circumstances. And I think, what could be a better learning experience than sitting with your grandma or grandpa or your mom or dad or your uncle or your older brother, older sister, sitting there actually in the field doing the practice after going through the class. Once you do that, I don't know why that would be considered a lesser value than actually going to a test somewhere with people that you don't know. It seems like it's a good bout for us.
So in efforts to streamline here with this package of bills, could this essentially reduce license fees and reduce the funding that goes toward habitat projects? Is there a concern about that?
There's absolutely no concern about that. I think that our funding is in great shape with the DNR. The DNR is one of the biggest agencies in the state of Wisconsin, if not the biggest. Their budget is humongous. And for anyone that talks about if we do this, that we might reduce funding for certain habitat projects or whatever it might be, it's simply a matter of priority for the Wisconsin DNR to decide where they're going to spend their funds. They have a huge, huge budget. And to be honest with you, the sportsmen of the state of Wisconsin have traditionally and continuously funded all of the different projects, even for those that, there's some folks that spend some time outdoors that don't have to buy a license or whatever, and we fund all those projects too. So I have zero worries about that, to be honest with you.
Package includes bills that would increase the number of planted pheasants to 200,000 and state-raised brook trout in Lake Michigan to 100,000. Why are more needed?
So I'm actually the author of the bill on the pheasants. I grew up here in western Wisconsin, a little place called Aaron Prairie Township. And, as I was a kid, the DNR traditionally has stocked much more pheasants than they currently do or have for probably the last decade or so. And we used to get just a ton of people coming out on the weekends and pheasant hunting. And it used to be Wisconsin was revered as one of the higher end pheasant hunting states. And we weren't South Dakota, we're not North Dakota. That's true. And we're never going to be, but we used to plant a much higher population of pheasants, and it was just a much higher quality hunt for folks. They saw more people or more pheasants while they were in the field. Now, I live in an area where there's some DNR land, public hunting land, but there's one of the components of this bill, and we went through several drafts until we finally got it right before we put this out. My concern is that there is a lot of really good programs right now for farmers or just landowners in general to provide access to the general public for hunting, fishing, and trapping on their land. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make sure that we made where those pheasants can be stocked isn't just on the 40 acres of DNR land that gets pounded pretty hard, that we can actually stock these pheasants in anywhere that is signed up for a program that requires it to be open for public hunting. So our pheasant stocking, it's not like we're going to dump a whole bunch of pheasants in one 40-acre parcel. We're going to try to spread these out across Wisconsin and hopefully make a much better, higher quality of hunt. We can get back to the days of people coming for the weekend to go pheasant hunting, spending money in town in the bars and restaurants, maybe catching a hotel room if they're from out of town. I really think it's an economic driver and gets back to the way it was, like when I was a kid and people came from all over to go pheasant hunting here.
Yeah, it sounds like, if there is an economic market for hunting more pheasants, why should the government be getting involved here?
That's the way we've always done it. We've always stocked pheasants and brook trout and fish in Lake Michigan and Lake Superior. So the state of Wisconsin for a long time, and I'll be honest that I was critical of that till I understood the economic drivers behind it, that we've always invested in those areas and those resources because we knew that the economic return would be greater than the investment.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about a new package of bills with Republican State Senator Rob Staffsholt from New Richmond. He chairs the State Senate Committee on Sporting Heritage, Small Business, and Rural Issues. You can join in. How do you feel about the state creating a hunting season for sandhill cranes? Have your crops been damaged by these birds? Do you cherish seeing these creatures in our state? Join in at 800-642-1234. So moving on to sandhill cranes, why create a hunting season for sandhills?
You know, sandhill cranes are a hot topic and have been for at least a decade here in Wisconsin because there's been some political willingness to keep them from being hunted in the state. And it's each year it gets to be more and more as I travel around and go to meetings and talk to constituents. More and more people want to have a crane hunting season. We have a really robust population of sandhill cranes and more than enough to be able to be hunted here. A lot of other states, especially a few states just to the west of us, hunt sandhill cranes with no problems. The biggest concern was Wisconsin has engaged in some sandhill crane, other crane restoration work, and we were always worried that we would go backwards in that if we opened up a sandhill crane hunting season. And
yeah, because the International Crane Foundation is worried hunters would mistakenly kill whooping cranes as an effort, you know, are really ongoing to reintroduce that bird to Wisconsin. How would the state manage hunts to ensure sandhill cranes are not overkilled and whooping cranes remain protected?
Yeah, I think it's like that's a concern and it's a valid concern. But I think that it's no different than any other species that we hunt, say ducks. You need to be able to identify what you're doing when you're in the field, and sportsmen do that day in and day out every day. You can only take a certain number of certain ducks, and you just have to be able to identify that. And that's part of the guise of being a sportsman is being able to do that. And I think this is no different. I think there's concern up front, but I think we'll find that it's not a huge issue. I mean, other states are doing it, and they're finding that they don't have any problems either. So I think the other thing with the sandhill crane is I hear probably equally from farmers who are non-sportsmen each spring as sandhill cranes are in their fields, and they're going right down the row plucking seed out. We've had that here on our farm and lots of other folks a little bit north of me here in New Richmond. A good friend of mine has a farm, and there's some ponds around there, and they have a lot of damage from sandhill cranes to their agricultural fields. And the process for dealing with that, if you're a farmer, is working with USDA, and it's a long and cumbersome process. So we're hoping we can provide some relief to those farmers as well.
Let's take a call. Becky joining us from Hustaford. Becky, hi, go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I come from a family of hunters and trappers and fisher persons. And one of the species that our family always enjoyed hunting and eating were ruffed grouse. I hear you talking about increasing the number of pheasants that are introduced into Wisconsin, but they're not a native species. I'm wondering what's being done to increase and improve habitat for native species like the ruffed grouse, because we've seen the numbers drop in northern Wisconsin with shifts in habitat and some of the
fluctuations. Yeah, Becky, thank you. Senator Staffsholt, go ahead.
Yeah, Becky, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool grouse hunter, but I do observe the grouse population when I'm hunting other things a lot, and I agree with you that I think the biggest challenge to the ruffed grouse in northern Wisconsin is the change in the habitat. The reason we're stocking pheasants, or that we have the bill to try to increase the stocking of pheasants, is because traditionally those are farm fields and grassy areas and fence lines is their kind of habitat, where a grouse needs a more wooded area and somewhat of an open wooded area with some aspen regrowth after logging often is kind of their feeding area. So the biggest challenge with grouse, I think, is actually the habitat, where the pheasant's a little bit easier because that habitat hasn't changed quite as much. So,
Becky, thank you.
More.
Yeah,
let's work on that too.
Let's pause right there with Republican State Senator Rob Stafschultz. Served two terms in the Assembly before being elected to represent the 10th Senate District in 2020. We're discussing his legislative priorities with your questions. What priorities do you want to convey for Northwestern Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. Back for more State Cap in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with State Senator Rob Stafschultz of New Richmond, who's with us for about nine more minutes. State Senator, you've co-authored a bill regarding reciprocity for out-of-state licenses to carry a concealed weapon. Can you explain what you're doing with this particular legislation?
Following the U.S. Constitution. I mean, the Second Amendment already gives us the right to bear arms. And through the concealed carry process, one of the things that we hear from sportsmen, and it seems like that could be two entirely different issues, and I'm sure we could fill a whole show just talking about concealed carry, but what happens with sportsmen who choose to carry a sidearm or a pistol on their side while hunting, and I've actually witnessed this myself, is all of a sudden it gets a little cool out, or in the morning you put a flannel shirt on and it falls down over that firearm, and now it's a concealed carried weapon instead of being an open carry weapon, which is a significantly different than current law. So this just tries to make it easier so that folks don't have to go through an entire process.
Yeah, permits are currently honored in the vast majority of states, with just some caveats in a handful of states. Why are you trying to change
that? I don't find that to be true.
Okay.
It is a mess of different regulations and folks that travel from different states. It's a complicated mess trying to figure out where you can, where you can't, based on which concealed carry permit you have.
Would this weaken the purpose of background checks?
No, absolutely not. When you buy a firearm, that's at the point. The background check happens at the point of purchase. It doesn't happen whether or not you carry a concealed weapon or not.
Let's take a call. Chris now in Milwaukee. Chris, go ahead.
First of all, I really have a problem with men who can't tuck in his shirt and has to have a law. But that's not why I called. I'm from Milwaukee. We in Milwaukee don't want guns here. I do not understand why they're trying to get rid of the mayor because of all the gun crime, when the mayor and the rest of us have been begging and begging the Republicans in the State House to get rid of letting everybody have a gun in the city. There can be regulations. People who are from out of state can go around on the freeways to up north where they can have all the guns and you all can shoot whatever you want.
All right. Well, Chris, I want to stop here. But Chris, very concerned about the ripple effect that this legislation would have.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand the comment about the tucked in shirt part, if that was directed at me specifically or what we were talking about. But I, you know, one of the things I try to do when I'm in the legislature is not weigh into areas I don't know, and I specifically don't know a great deal about the mayor and what's all going on over in Milwaukee. You know, I try to represent those people way over here in the northwest corner of the state the best I can. So the inner workings of the city of Milwaukee are something I'm not overly familiar with or have a big concern over based on my constituents over here. So
Wisconsin does not allow the general public to carry concealed firearms without a state license, and one bill in the new package would eliminate that law so people could carry concealed firearms without a license. Why
Correct.
How do you feel about that? Why do you want that?
I think it's a valuable law. I think it upholds your constitutional Second Amendment rights. And I think that the permitting that the state does, I think that right's already guaranteed to you under the U.S. Constitution. So I think it's an unnecessary step.
The bill would eliminate laws against carrying concealed firearms in some places like police stations. And these places could instead post signs telling visitors that concealed carry is not allowed. How does that go far enough to protect people in sensitive areas, sensitive places?
Well, I guess it depends on what anywhere that I travel with my family is a sensitive area to me. So I guess it depends on your definition of a sensitive area. However, I will tell you that currently that's the practice in Wisconsin. Now, with the current permitting process, if you have a concealed weapon and a concealed carry permit and you're concealing a weapon and you go to a private business or city hall or anywhere, if they post a sign, no guns allowed, then that's the way it is now. So the process you're talking about by putting a sign on the door, that wouldn't change the process at all.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about a new package of bills with Republican State Senator Rob Stafshult from New Richmond, represents voters in northwestern Wisconsin. You can join in 800-642-1234. How do you feel that this package of bills was released in conjunction with Hunter Nation, the Kansas group, hunting group, which is also suing the state over the ability to hunt wolves?
How do I feel about it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it always, you know, I read that yesterday, too, that the Hunter Nation is a Kansas group, but the, and I guess I was not aware that they were considered a Kansas group because the person that runs it is a gentleman by the name of Luke Hilgeman's from right here in the center part of the state of Wisconsin and has deep roots in Wisconsin and loves Wisconsin. I talk to him on a regular basis. So their heart is definitely in Wisconsin. If there's some legal mailing address that's in Kansas, I guess I'm not aware of that, but they're one of the up-and-coming premier groups that defend sportsmen's rights and are aware of, you know, the sportsmen's traditions in the state of Wisconsin and across the nation. So I'm happy to have partnered with them on this particular issue.
Let's take another call now. Bruce is joining us from Eau Claire. Bruce, hi. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I'd like to ask the senator, is your committee the one we're waiting for right now to take up the confirmation of Susan Nass to the Natural Resources Board?
Yeah, Bruce, that's a great question. Actually, that confirmation has not been referred to my committee, so I'm unable to do that now. I believe that confirmation is sitting in Senate Org, so I'd be happy to do that, but it has not been referred to my committee yet.
Doctor,
or any committee. There's several different committees it could go to. It's not slated just to go to mine, but it has not been referred to any of those.
Bruce, referring to Dr. Fred Prain, who's become a very divisive figure over the months, that he's refused to step down from his term that ended in May on the Natural Resources Board. What would you suggest Governor Evers do next?
What would I consider he do?
Yeah, if the Senate won't take up the confirmation, what would you suggest the governor do?
Follow the law. Well, state statute says that we will have a wolf season, and he keeps ignoring the law. And the reason why we have all these controversial things going on is because him and his administration and Secretary Preston Cole refused to follow the law. If he followed the law, it would be over.
So if you put the shoe on the other foot and you were a Republican governor, would you sit back and say, well, okay, the Dr. Prain won't step down, you know, so be it? Or would you fight it?
That's a great question. One of my concerns is by not following the law, Governor Evers has set up this whole controversial process. And what I'm worried about, as you point out, whether it's a Democratic governor or a Republican governor, that this is going to set precedents going forward. And I'm afraid that once you do something once, it becomes far easier for both sides to do that going forward. And I think that's unfortunate. And I think that, this could have been avoided. But my concern is that this doesn't keep happening going forward. And I think once you do it once, it will.
State Senator Stafshult, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Rob Stafshult, Republican State Senator from New Richmond. I'm Kay Dircher-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.